just another solid day in California. It's just the way that I was raised in California.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Where you stand?
LA living gridlocked in the fast lane. Trying to strike a rich match, play my cash game. At least a couple degrees from the coast where they got money.
Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast. It is a Thursday afternoon, and I'm joined by the host of the TNT show in Missoula, Montana on ESPN Radio out there, and also from SkylineSports.com, it's Coulter Nuanez. How's it going, Coulter?
Very, very well, Owen. How you been?
I'm good. You know, football season's starting, and you're somebody who covers the Big Sky in a pretty complete way, so I thought I'd get you on the podcast and get some early impressions and some thoughts about the beginning of the season with week one coming up here. I guess it's officially week one. Cal Poly, of course, had a week zero game last week at home against Colgate, and they kind of laid an egg, to put it lightly. How much of that game did you were you able to take in, and did you see the ugliness from where you are? I know it was nationally televised.
I did. Yeah, I was able to watch the replay of it, and I was actually at a wedding during the day, but I was watching the updates on just the stat links and stuff, and then I was able to rewatch it. And you know, I thought it was definitely a combination of several different things. You could definitely tell how much Cal Poly misses Daniel Graves. I know that he was internally, everybody had a lot of respect for what he brought to the table, but I think he was kind of an underrated guy in the league last year, despite being, you know, an all Big Sky player. He operated that offense so efficiently last year. Then a new offensive coordinator in the fold. You could definitely tell that there was some speed bumps there. And, you know, they kind of shot themselves in the foot as well. There wasn't the explosive plays you want to see out of the triple option offense. Kyle Lewis did not live up to any of the expectations that they're going to have for him. I know he scored the one long touchdown late, but just 7 carries for 19 yards out of your slot back, that makes everything not go so well. And I think that's why you saw limited production from Khalil Jenkins, and you probably saw Joe Prothro get overused as well. So definitely not a good start for Cal Poly, a team that I actually thought was going to have huge expectations come into the year. And I think that still remains just because of the Big Sky schedule they're going to play. Yeah. But definitely not the way you want to get started when you're a team that's fresh off a playoff berth.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's one of those things where early on, you know, Kyle had probably a 50-yard touchdown pass go through his hands. It was just right in his, you know, it was a perfect throw by Jenkins. A few plays after, Jenkins actually overshot J.J. Koski in the same drive in about the middle of the second quarter when Cal Poly, I think, was down either 10 or 14 to nothing. And it was kind of one of those plays, one of those drives that was really kind of a momentum killer for really a quarter and a half after that, when it comes to, you know, those big plays in the triple option. You don't get a lot of, you know, opportunities to pass, but when you do, it's a lot of the time a deep ball downfield over the top, and if you can execute those, you know, you can score 35 or 40 points real easy out of the offense. If you don't execute those, you're going to be stuck chasing the game like Cal Poly was towards the end there. And I know Kyle definitely, just, you know, by his body language and everything else, you know, he's hyper aware of stuff like that. He's hyper aware of the impact that he has on that team, and it'll be interesting to see how he especially bounces back here in week one against San Jose State.
And the thing is, with this offense, the nature of the offense, you can't really ever point a finger at one guy, because, as you know, right, it has to be a well-oiled machine, and when it's not, it looks so clunky. But when it looks, I mean, when they're rolling, it's a beautiful thing to watch, because it's just one option to the next option to the next option. And when all the options are working, I mean, you've seen it the last couple of years, they play fast, they get up and down, and they just pound people. But yeah, when there's the kink in what they're doing, it kind of makes all the aspects fall apart, which I think that's kind of what you saw on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was funny. I was watching that game and just thinking about, you know, the art of the play calling in the offense and how much of a feel and an art it is rather than a science almost. You know, guys can do so much preparation. And I know that Jim Kraft is a guy who prepares a lot. And I know all the Cal Poly offensive coordinators, they've had, this is their third one in 3 years, I think. You know, all of them are prepared, but when you get down into it and you get down into game situations and, you know, there are things like plays coming in late or whatever else happening. And the last kind of 5 minute drive that they had, they hung around the 50 yard line for a really long time, it seemed like. And, you know, you see some of these little things coming in. One of the items that I asked Walsh about, and he gave Colgate credit, was the corner blocking. When you talk about Cal Poly, you talk about inside to pro throw and then being able to run that option or pitch outside to a guy like Kyle Lewis or Shubi Danu. And one of the things that I think Cal Poly fans even don't realize is how important the wide receiver blocking can be. When you had guys over the past 2 or 3 years like Jordan Hines and Carson McMurtry, who are big bodies who could you know, keep a cornerback at bay, I guess, from sealing the edge or causing trouble for the wide receiver for the slot back coming around the edge. And certainly teams are figuring out how to scheme against that. But in general, I thought that, you know, the edge blocking was not, you know, was not where it needed to be either. And that's a big part of Kyle Lewis's game, is being able to get that edge and to turn the ball upfield. And I thought Colgate did just a really great job of holding those edges and holding down pro throw as well. A lot of the time over the past couple of years, teams have decided to let the quarterback keep the ball too. And I thought, you know, the fact that the next highest pro throw had 39 carries, the next highest had 7 on the team. So look for that, I think, this week to be a lot more evened out, for the play calling to be a little bit more evened out and maybe more unpredictable against San Jose State. It's going to need to be if Cal Poly is going to beat a FBS team.
And one thing that Walsh has talked about so often throughout the last 3 or 4 years, when he's, for lack of a better word, defending this offense,
right?
He always talks about how a lot of this isn't necessarily play calling as much as it is what is the defense doing, and then how do we capitalize on what they're taking away. A couple of years ago, you saw teams basically decided, okay, we're going to take away the outside stuff and the inside stuff, and we're going to make Chris Brown keep the ball. And Chris Brown is such a spectacular athlete and such a tough kid. He was able to gut out some stuff and help them get a couple wins, but he wore out by the end of the year. And you wonder now, you know, last year I thought was the best that their option offense has looked as a whole since they joined the Big Sky. And so much of that was Jano Graves' decision-making, but also his ability to throw the ball, because that gives them basically a quadruple option. And that's so hard for defenses to defend. The worry for Portland or for Cal Poly is that, that defenses basically decide, okay, we're going to take away the pitch and the quarterback, and we're going to hammer Joe Prothrow. Because you know, Prothrow, he's a horse, and he can take it to a certain extent, but no man can take a beating. Yeah, I mean, if he was to have to endure a beating like he did on Saturday 11 times, he's not making it 11 games. So you wonder if that's going to be a strategy that carries over. But Walsh admitted, I watched your video from the post-game press conference, and I know Walsh admitted that was way too many, and he re-emphasized that on Tuesday when I talked to him. So I think that they're definitely going to have to mitigate that, because Prothrow is definitely their stud, but they're going to have to figure out a way to keep him healthy. 39 carries is definitely way too many.
And Jared Muhammad's a senior, and he's Prothrow's backup, and he's, you know, he's solid for a lot of kind of, you know, 5 to 12 yard kind of gashes when people don't expect him to get the ball. People expect him to be a blocker a lot of the time, but you know, if he gets 10 carries a game, that, you know, that can kind of mitigate some of the Prothrow carries as well. And that's one of the things that Walsh said is, you know, when it comes to that fullback dive, it is like it's the position besides defensive back that Cal Poly really has the most I guess the most depth at, you know, with Reagan Anger and a couple of other guys back there as well. You know, they're able to bring guys through if they need to. And while they want to feature a guy like Prothrow, I mean, he's a preseason All-American, and he's built to take it. I asked him how he felt after the game. He said, you know, I feel fine. You know, like you said, we'll see how that goes, you know, for the rest of the year. I wanted to get your impressions on a couple of other, I guess, big sky things. One, you mentioned it, you alluded to it earlier, but Cal Poly's schedule this year kind of lays out as easy as a big sky schedule can ever be, probably, for a team like Cal Poly. They don't have to play Montana or Montana State, which means they don't have to even have a chance of going to Montana or Montana State. They don't have to play Eastern. They don't have to play North Dakota. They who are, you know, really the cream of the crop in the conference, and the two best teams they play, Weber State and Northern Arizona, they get those at home. And so, you know, their 8-game conference schedule all of a sudden becomes, you know, 8 very winnable games when you look at it on paper. But you have these three preseason games, and if they play like they did last weekend, you know, they're not going to get through those 8 games in the way that they want to. What are your thoughts about their schedule, I guess, and how that can impact the ability to win some conference games and maybe compete for the Big Sky in a year that they don't play those, you know, two top teams and then the Montana teams either?
I think a lot of times when there's 36 media members who vote in the Big Sky Conference preseason polls. And I think a lot of times people just kind of pick and choose based on merit and prestige and reputation and things like that. But Brooks and I, my brother and I, who helps me run Skyline Sports, we break down the entire composite schedule and we pick every single game for every single team in the Big Sky Conference and then kind of break down what our records are going to be. And on paper, when we put a pencil to it, we had Cal Poly going 9-2 with a 7-1 record in the Big Sky because of this schedule. Now, that does come with a grain of salt just because, you know, as they always say, games are not played on paper. And with this league, there's always a team or two that overachieves, and there's always a team or two that underachieves. But looking at Cal Poly's schedule, I agree with you. Having Weber State and Northern Arizona, two playoff contenders at home, those are their two toughest matchups. They get Idaho State, which, you know, now the league has improved, but it's
also the scariest game to me. Idaho State game.
Yeah. I mean, the league has improved, but there's also, we're to the point now where there's a couple teams that they're kind of whipping boys. I think Sac State, Davis in year one under Dan Hawkins, I think they'll probably get that thing rolling a little bit, but I think they're going to be down this year. And then Idaho State, it's just such an unknown with Rob Fennessy being a first-time head coach, coupled with all the problems they've had there. I mean, those are kind of the three teams that are the bottom dwelling teams, so to speak. So if you get any of those teams, you absolutely have to take care of business. Yeah. So I think, you know, just on paper, Cal Poly has at least 3 wins right there. Northern Colorado is much, much improved, but you know, I think they've had a really hard time stopping the run. And as you saw last year, they gave up points in bunches to Cal Poly. So I think that's probably one that Cal Poly should be heavily favored in. And then Northern Arizona, they've had a really hard time defensively as well. They're going to be really explosive on offense with Case Cook is back. But getting that game as your conference opener, as everybody knows, Cal Poly is better early just because they're healthy. And getting that game at home should be a good way for them to kick things off. But then on the flip side of that, I think Southern Utah and Portland State are two of those teams that could be surprise teams in this league. Utah has, you know, they kind of just toiled there. Everybody picks them 7th every year, and they've exceeded those expectations every year, including winning the league 2 years ago. The thing about Southern Utah that you always have to worry about, or I guess you always have to remember, is they have a very unique situation with their missionary, with their stance on Mormon missions. And they're bringing back, you know, they sometimes might lose some seniors, but they get – ready-made guys coming into the program that might not have been on campus for two or 3 years who are then back right in the fold. And one of those is Shanidi Ahonadu. He led the Big Sky Conference in tackles 2 years ago. He's a first-team All-Big Sky middle linebacker. He's been gone, and I think a lot of people forgot about him. But you pair him with Mike Needham, and then you have a healthy Kyle Hanneman at safety, and that's a pretty good defensive trio. That coupled with the fact they have their starting quarterback back, they're going to be pretty good up front. And they've kind of cultivated a little bit of a winning tradition here these last 3 years. You know, they made the playoffs a couple times. They won the league in 2015. So I think they're a team that flies under the radar always, but they're going to be a tough test. And they have been a team that's proven they can play with Cal Poly. They've proven that they can handle that triple option. And then Portland State's the other one. You know, Portland State had the great year 2 years ago. They were a 9-win team. Had several NFL guys on defense in Bruce Barnum's first season. But last year was literally one of the strangest seasons I've ever seen. first in the offseason. They lost their outside linebacker. He died from complications of a tonsillectomy, A.J. Slaughter. And then Kyle Smith, who in my opinion was probably the best NFL prospect in the league, their left tackle, he overdosed on drugs and passed away. So they had two of their probably 10 best players die in the offseason. Then Michael Doman, one of their starting defensive linemen, his son died in a tragic farming accident. It was just a freak thing. So then that was kind of just the last dagger to the heart. And then they go out and they suffered more than 20 season-ending injuries to guys on their two deep. They lost both their starting safeties. They lost a bunch of offensive linemen. Devon Dade, who was their top defensive end, he had a season-ending injury as well. So all that, all those circumstances just really killed them. And sure, they kind of limped their way to a 3-8 finish. But Barnum can coach, and Portland State's always had talent. So if they can get things back rolling, I mean, they're going to be a team that is – they're based on toughness, the way they play defense. They're going to challenge you. They're going to get in your face. They can play defense against the run when they're fully healthy. So that's another one that could be kind of a coin flip now if they are as improved as you'd think. But to answer your question, I really do think, though, the schedule favors Cal Poly. They're just going to have to find some momentum. And as always, with the nature of the offense that they play, they're going to have to stay healthy.
Well, and this year more than other years, too. I mean, even last year, you had this idea that Dano, who did stay healthy, and I'm using air quotes here because probably if you asked him, he'd probably tell you that he's still sore and still, you know, hurts getting up out of bed in the morning. You know, when you talk about a guy who started every game at quarterback for Cal Poly, that was the first time since probably Andre Broaddus did, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever that was, when he was a senior that year, and they lost at Sam Houston in the playoffs. So starting every game at quarterback for Cal Poly is not an easy thing to do, and they don't have a ton of depth at quarterback this year. You know, they lost their backup quarterback, and Jake Jeffrey is a guy who doesn't have a lot of snaps, obviously, in games. And so Khalil Jenkins, you know, last year at least had started a game the previous year as a true freshman. This year it's kind of like, up for grabs in terms of what would happen if Khalil went down and how that would go. Jake Jeffrey is certainly a guy who can throw the ball and a guy who they think is capable, but that's not a position they have a ton of, depth in. And so maybe that's another reason for Khalil not carrying the ball more often, even if that's maybe sometimes what the defense might have been giving him. I'm looking at, I know you're based in Montana there in Missoula, and I was looking at the preseason rankings, and for the first time in my memory anyway, neither Montana or Montana State was in the top five in terms of preseason polls. What's going on up there in the state of Montana, and which of those two teams maybe overachieves this year and ends up in the top five? Because it's really hard for me to think about, I mean, another year, you know, back-to-back years where neither team is at the top half of the conference.
Well, and that's a very good point. I know Cal Poly's only been in the league since 2012, but the road to the Big Sky title has gone through Missoula and Bozeman, point-blank period, for a full generation. Either the Cats or the Grizz have won the Big Sky title every single year from 1993 until 2011. So to get to this point now, since the league expanded, where now last year not only did neither team contend for the league title, but neither team even made the playoffs, that's a very unique situation in Montana. I mean, as everybody in the Big Sky knows, the Montana schools have some pretty unique advantages. We're not in big metropolitan areas. We have no one to compete with. It's the biggest show in town, and two of probably the three or four best stadiums in the entire FCS are here in Montana. So the home field advantage is profound. Just the resources that they have to recruit with are profound, and the fact that no one really recruits Montana, despite the fact that the state of Montana has put more people, more guys per capita into the NFL than any state in the union. We're talking about less than 1 million people here, so take that with a grain of salt as well. But it's 13 right. Montana natives in the NFL right now. So there's in-state talent as well, and no one recruits it. So Montana inherits a lot of Mountain West or even borderline Pac-12 caliber guys who might just be from a tiny town in Montana that no one sees besides the Cats or the Grizz. So all those circumstances have catered to a tremendous amount of success on both sides of the rivalry over the last 25 or 30 years. And so to see just where they are at is pretty crazy. I think that Montana is in a completely different situation than Montana State. Bob Stitt inherited a program that, despite being awash in controversy with the sexual assault scandal that was on campus during 2011, 2012 that really rocked Missoula. And despite being on NCAA probation for 4 years and losing scholarships, losing practice time, the Grizz are still the Grizz. I mean, you're talking about a team that won the Big Sky 15 times in 25 years. You're talking about a team that went to the playoffs 20 out of 22 seasons. So the foundation he inherited was very, very strong despite some of the circumstantial stuff. And the talent base that he inherited was incredibly strong as well. To me, Montana was among the most talented teams in the league last year as well. They just had some pretty big coaching blunders. Those guys got kind of stuck in their systems and refused to adjust. They screamed off to a 5-1 start. They won at Northern Iowa. They scored 68 points back-to-back weeks, and they were sitting there at number 6 in the country, and then it all fell apart on them. They basically refused to play zone coverage against NAU or Eastern Washington defensively, and both those teams just absolutely shredded them, and that two-game losing streak basically started a free fall that caused them to lose 4 out of 5 games down the stretch, including losing to Montana State in Missoula. And, you know, it's a huge season in Missoula right now for Bob Stitt and Montana because it's a contract year. The fact that he missed the playoffs last year, that's only the third time they've missed the playoffs since 1993. Right. So if they miss the playoffs again, that contract's not getting renewed. Montana will be in the market for a new coach. That's point blank, period. Every single person that's involved with the program internally and externally knows that. So there's high expectations.
I'm sure Bob Stitt knows that, right?
Bob Stitt absolutely knows that. But the thing is, you know, over the last 9 months, I've talked to these guys extensively about it. They seem to be very humbled from last year, the way it all fell apart on them. They seem to be willing to make some of the changes they need to. And just attending the camps, the practices I have, they have a lot of talent. I mean, they should be, just talent-wise, man for man, they should be one of the top offensive and defensive units in the entire league. But can they put it together? You know, Stitt's system, when it rolls, you can win games by 60. But when it doesn't roll, you find yourself playing from behind, and it does not cater to that whatsoever. And Cal Poly is a prime example of that. Cal Poly has been able to basically outlast them and put them behind, basically put them behind and then keep them behind 2 years in a row. So it'll be interesting to see if the coaches are willing to make the adjustments and put their kids in a position to succeed. On the other side of the hill, over in Bozeman, because of Montana State's win in Missoula to end the year last year, optimism is flowing, and people have maybe a little bit over-elevated sense of where the Bobcat program's at. Montana State was powerful under Rob Ashe. They won 3 straight Big Sky titles. They made it to the semifinals of the FCS playoffs back-to-back years. But the program started to slowly erode, and there's a multitude of factors that went into that. But and the number one factor was Montana State felt so much – Ash and his staff felt so much pressure to win. They were basically trying to recruit on a Pac-12 or a Mountain West level, and they were going heads up with some of the premier schools on the West Coast for kids, and they lost almost every single one of those battles, which then caused them to fill their recruiting classes with a bunch of guys that were way down on the board and probably not the talent level that they needed.
So instead of securing those second tier guys who were probably more commensurate with FCS and with the Big Sky, they went after some big fish, spent their resources and time, you know, kind of trying to charm those guys, lost out on them. In the meantime, those other guys who are the next level down maybe got picked up by other schools, and now they're at the kind of tier three.
Yeah, exactly. And then they had to take some risks on some kids. You know, they took a bunch of kids that got in trouble or kicked out of other schools. They took a bunch of transfers. I mean, the 2015 recruiting class, they signed 9 transfers and literally only one of them panned out. All that stuff just really caused the foundation of the program to just bottom out. And so Jeff Choate takes over, and he sees what's going on right away. So he decides he's going to revamp this whole thing. They've already brought in 65 new guys. And that win they had over Montana gave them such an optimistic feel going in the offseason. But Choate has hammered over and over and over again for the last 9 months that it's one game. Sure, you beat your rival. It's definitely the biggest rivalry in the Big Sky Conference, so it holds some weight. But they were a 3-win team going into that game, and they only won 2 league games even with that victory last year. So they are by no means even close to having arrived yet. They're going to play a ton of kids this year that are super young. They're going to play 9 true freshmen on the 2 deep. They had Chris Murray is a true sophomore quarterback. Kevin Cassis, their best receiver, he's a true sophomore as well. They're starting, I think, 9 sophomores on either side of the ball. So it's still full force rebuilding. I think that while Montana has a ton of pressure, Choate has bought himself some time just with kind of his honesty in the rebuilding process, as well as just his kind of self-awareness. Yeah. And the fact that they are for sure rebuilding. But it's going to be funny because I've watched them. They are so improved. They practice so much harder. They have so much more toughness. They have so many better athletes than they have the last couple of years. But they have literally the hardest schedule in the Big Sky Conference when you factor in the non-conference with South Dakota State, Washington State, and Kennesaw State. And then combined with the league schedule they have, having to, you know, they have to go to Eastern, they have to go to North Dakota, they have to go to Weber State. So all those things, I could see them being a much improved team and still only win 4 or 5 games. So it's definitely 2 different dynamics in Montana right now.
Well, and it's easy to root for a team like Montana State when you're a fan and you say, okay, like I see a clear path, even if it's not something that's necessarily going to this season show up in wins and losses. I see a clear path and I can feel good about judging a team in a year or two here. Once they have some experience under their belt, this coach has a clear idea about some different, maybe some different fundamentals than a previous regime. I always think that's such an interesting thing in college sports where, the idea that winning is everything is definitely important. And in a place in a state like Montana, it's super important. But I know there are when regime changes happen, when coaching changes happen, and when, like you said, people are honest about things and are upfront, I think fans have capacity to say, okay, all right, I can get with that. I can get behind these true freshmen. Let's see which one of them gets better, and let's see who pans out, and let's build this program back up. And in a year or two, that's a pretty satisfying thing as a fan too.
Yeah, and Choate he's a man of many sayings. He's a very old school Western style cowboy, and he's just, there's that book Stuff My Dad Says. There you could write a book Stuff Jeff Choate Says, because he has a saying for everything. But a couple of his main tenets, he always is talking about: you get what you emphasize, and they are definitely emphasizing tough, hard nosed football, which has not been the case at Montana State for a little while. And they are definitely – his other famous line is, you have to trust the process. And I know that he himself is going to be a guy that has to buy into his own tenet, because he's incredibly competitive. He definitely plays – or he definitely coaches with a chip on his shoulder. So he's going to have to be patient himself, because it's going to be a trying year for them. But they do have so much young talent, and they're getting these guys – so game ready, just by playing them right away as a unit. They're not going to lose hardly anything again this year coming out of this thing, and they've recruited so well. So they might take their lumps, but if they're able to just swallow it this year, I really expect them to be back in a big way in a year from now.
Yeah, that combination of competitiveness and patience is sometimes also interesting to watch in a single person as they try to, manage their way through a season and manage their own emotions on the way through a season. Listen, week one's coming up, Coulter, and a lot of these Big Sky teams are playing a lot of FBS schools this week. Cal Poly, of course, is at San Jose State. Maybe the most winnable FBS game that a Big Sky team is playing. Portland State at Oregon State. Montana State's playing at Washington State this weekend. Eastern's at Texas Tech. UC Davis is at San Diego State. And Northern Arizona's at University of Arizona. They're going to go up against the Bear Down Bearcats. Arizona, no, they're not. Are they the Bearcats? What are the Wildcats?
Wildcats.
But you got a Bear Down out there in Arizona. So which of those games do you think is probably most winnable? I think it's probably Cal Poly at San Jose State. I saw somewhere that the Mustangs were favored in a road game coming off a FCS loss. So maybe that says something about San Jose State. But it'll be an interesting game this weekend. It's supposed to be 103 in San Jose on Saturday, 90-something at game time. And I talked with Chris Holder, the Cal Poly strength and conditioning coach. I saw him last night for a minute in San Luis Obispo. And, And he said it's going to be probably, you know, 120 on the field turf that they have there at San Jose State. There's no shade, you know, there's no nothing. San Jose really starts to cook if it's, you know, if it's hot up there. It's really kind of, you know, in the middle of the Silicon Valley there. I'm interested to see how Cal Poly responds to that, but, you know, on paper, it seems like that's the game that a Big Sky team could really easily win.
Totally agree. And that heat is going to affect both teams. And just with what Cal Poly tries to do to you, you know, it honestly could be a disadvantage for San Jose State just because of just the nature of the grind that Cal Poly is going to put you through. You know, when we broke down the composite schedule, we picked Cal Poly to win that game. And I still think that they definitely have a shot to do it. They competed well against FBS teams in recent years, and I expect them to do that again. As far as the rest of the slate, you know, I don't think Northern Arizona has much of a shot against Arizona. I don't think Portland State is going to have a chance to hang with Oregon State. Southern Utah, Oregon, that's a huge mismatch.
Right.
Rocky Long's got things rolling at San Diego State, so Davis is probably in trouble there. Montana State, in previous years, the Washington State game probably would have been a good matchup for them because it's a regional school. The Montana kids aren't scared of that. But Washington State has bona fide Heisman candidate in Luke Falk and probably one of the three best front sevens in the entire Pac-12 and probably one of the three best offensive lines in the entire Pac-12. And the fact that Montana State is going to roll with a couple true freshmen on their among their top three quarterbacks, oh, man, it could be a long day for them. So I don't know if the Bobcats have much of a shot either. Eastern Washington, Texas Tech will be interesting because both those teams don't care whatsoever if they get into a shootout. And they both kind of dare their opponents to get into shootouts with them. So, you know, that could be a game that's purely about turnovers. Whoever can, you know, kind of break the streak, so to speak, break serve like in a tennis match, that, you know, Eastern could be able to hang there just because that could be a 65-55 game there in Lubbock.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one to watch. And then the other one I think it's interesting is, I mean, Utah is a top 25 Pac-12 team, no doubt. But the style North Dakota plays, Bubba Schweigert is not scared to sit on that play clock until that reads 1 second. And he will do it for an entire game. So I expect that to be a low-scoring game. I don't know if North Dakota can manufacture enough points to be able to win that thing. But if they were to be able to hang and lose 20-13 or something like that, it would not surprise me whatsoever just because of the way that Schweigert will go into that thing with the style and just the system that they run.
Yeah, the thing about North Dakota 2 years ago, actually, when they came into Cal Poly, and it was, I think, on the day that their new mascot got announced, they played Cal Poly, and they just handled them here in San Luis Obispo. And the thing that struck me was just the size and strength of their offensive line. And if it's anything like it was then it, you know, it's not going to be, you know, they're not going to be scared going up against anybody in terms of, you know, size and up front. And if you can control that, then, like you said, you can control a lot of things in terms of limiting total number of possessions. And when you talk about a 21-14 or something like that game, you're thinking about a game with maybe limited possessions and letting that play clock run. I love that idea of a triple digit in that other game, the Texas Tech Eastern game. I love the idea of a triple digit over-under maybe when it comes to two teams who can put the ball. I'm sure it's not in triple digits, but I love that concept of possible shootouts. That's a good game to take a look at as well. So big picture, who kind of stays out of the teams that did a little bit better last year? Like you said, Weber State, Southern Utah, even Northern Colorado kind of came up a little bit with a 4-4 Big Sky record last year. Which of those teams or which of those teams that maybe had a little bit better year or even if you include the Montana schools had a little worse year than predicted, which of those schools kind of stays in the bottom or top half and then which kind of regresses back to their traditional kind of norms in terms of their record and how they perform in conference?
Well, I think Weber State is the team in the league that gets talked about the least, that is probably the most consistently improving team. I think all things considered, I think if you were to factor in recruiting ability, vision, resources, steadiness in what you're trying to do, and then in-game coaching, I personally think that Jay Hill is the best coach in the Big Sky Conference. I think that, you know, it's hard to slight Bubba Schweigert for what he's built there at North Dakota.
Right.
And I think he's a guy that is a stalwart, but he's not necessarily as dynamic as Jay, and he's not necessarily as good of a recruiter, although they have done a great job recruiting, and Bubba does have a very solid idea of what he wants. The fact that North Dakota is kind of on their way out of the league, I think all things considered, Jay is probably the best coach in the conference, and he was such a dynamic recruiter at the University of Utah for more than a decade. And so the thing about Jay is they have really, really revamped everything they've done on both sides of the ball, and they've been able to continually improve with the playoff berth last year, even with enduring a ton of injuries. I mean, they basically played the second half of their season last year with their sixth-string running back who hadn't even played for 3 years. He'd been on a mission for 3 years. He came back as basically a seventh-year super senior, and after basically Emmanuel Poole.
So like a 25-year-old.
Yeah, he's literally 25 or 26, yeah. I mean, Emmanuel Pooler had an ankle injury. Trayshawn Garrett had an ankle injury. Zach Smith completely fell off the map. He was a shell of himself after being a starter as a sophomore. Eric Wilkes ended up suffering an ankle injury that then basically ended his career. He's gone now. He left the program. They were without Emmett Tella, who's their best defensive player, a first-team All-League linebacker, who ended up having to retire as well. And despite all that, they still made it into the playoffs. So I think if they can stay healthy, they'll see vast improvements. But the other thing is, Jay has been doing that with Jadrian Clark, who up until last year was one of the most volatile quarterbacks in the entire league. But now Jay's going to have a chance to put his guy in place. I think Stephen right. Cantwell is probably the leader in the clubhouse coming out of the offseason. But with the way Jay can recruit, you have to think that they're going to have a dude or two there, and you have to think they're going to continue to get better talent-wise across the board. So I think Weber has a chance to take another step. I think that they should definitely be in the hunt for a playoff berth again. Like I said, I think Montana has a ton of talent. And honestly, if they're not a playoff team this year, this coaching staff for sure deserves to be let go because of the guys that they have, coupled with the schedule they have. If they're not playing in the postseason at the end of the year, there will be a change in Montana. Northern Colorado definitely took a step last year, but they lose so much. It's going to be really hard for them to maintain that. They had 15 all-league guys last year, and I think 14 of them graduated. You get Jacob Nipp back. He was their starting quarterback 2 years ago. He got hurt last year, gave way to Kyle Slaughter, who's now in the NFL. But Nipp is a solid player. Trey Reek, their running back, he's a guy that has had a problem staying healthy, but when healthy is really good. So they could be explosive on offense again, especially with Hakeem Deggs back on the outside as well. But I think they'll probably take a step back just because they're going to be replacing so many key guys defensively. I think we're going to learn a lot about Cal Poly these next 2 weeks because, like we said, we broke down their whole schedule. They do have a favorable Big Sky schedule. But if they're limping into a conference play at 0-3, which is a real possibility, where's their confidence going to be at? Where's their health going to be at? Walsh is such a fiery, intense coach that I think he can definitely galvanize guys when things are going well. But I also think he can lose guys when things aren't because he is, he's so in your face and he definitely does not like to lose. So I think that we're going to learn a lot about Cal Poly these next couple weeks. The other team I think is going to make a big jump, though, is Northern Arizona. They were favored in the league going into last year. Case Cookus breaks his collarbone in their last non-conference game, and they were just devastated. I mean, I remember talking to Jerome the week after, and he basically was waving the white flag already, and conference play hadn't even started. Sowers was basically like, our guy is gone. What are we going to do? And with him back in the fold, that makes them super dangerous because, Gage Gubrud is a tremendous player at Eastern Washington, definitely one of the best offensive threats in the league. But Case Cookus is the best pure quarterback in the Big Sky. And if he can reattain that form he had as a freshman, Northern Arizona is going to be incredibly, incredibly dangerous. And I think Portland State is another team that can make a jump as well. It all depends for them on how does their true freshman quarterback perform. They named Jelani Eason the starter out of camp. He looked decent but not great against BYU in their opener. But the defense looked mean, and you could see what they see in Eason. He's a big, strong, athletic kid with a big arm. So if he can settle in, they could make some noise as well. So, I mean, as always, Big Sky is filled with diverse teams, and It's all about kind of what your schedule is and what your injury situation is. But, you know, to me, I think that there's probably six or seven teams that could compete for playoff bids. And it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
I think what you said about the next couple of weeks with Cal Poly really is an important thing for us here, in that, you know, if they go 0-3 in the preseason, then they're really looking at needing to go 7-1 in conference. And even with the easy schedule, a 7-1 conference season is, you know, a pretty remarkable thing for any school. I know we had 2 8-0 teams last year, which was kind of an anomaly. But, you know, when you really look at the Big Sky, going 7-1 is a huge ordeal. You know, if they're 0-3 and they go 7-1, then, you know, 7-4, you know, really does, you know, pretty much get you into the playoffs. But I think if you're 0-3 and you go 6-2, now you're 6-5 and with not a great conference and not a great conference schedule, not a lot of great wins. I don't know that that's something that that gets them. And I think was it Weber State last year, one of those schools who tied Cal Poly in the conference record, might have been on the bubble in terms of playoffs, and Cal Poly got in because of the teams that they played, and I think the win at South Dakota State last year. So, you know, got to get one of these next two games really is kind of what they got to be focused on, and I think this week is a potential upset special. I actually don't think the Heat helps them because I don't think they have a ton of depth up front on the defensive line. I don't think they're kind of, you know, just being a FCS team, they have less scholarship players than an FBS team. So, you know, maybe San Jose State will be able to kind of run more guys in and out of the game that are quality guys. I'm not sure. But Cal Poly also has a lot of San Jose State connections. Like I talked about Dr. Holder, who's the Cal Poly strength and conditioning coach, left Cal Poly about a decade ago to go to San Jose State for a little while, is back at Cal Poly now. There's some San Jose State strength and conditioning guys who used to be at Cal Poly as well, along with, you know, coaches that have moved back and forth. San Jose State's actually geographically the second closest Division I football school, and they're probably only about 10 minutes. It's probably like only 15 minute difference to drive from here to Fresno versus here to San Jose. So, you know, it's geographically the closest school that they could, you know, for all intents and purposes, the closest school they could play, along with Fresno. And when you talk about playing another state school, they're both in the Cal State system. You know, whenever they play Fresno State or San Diego State or San Jose State, there's, you know, a little bit more on the line there in terms of, you know, bragging rights and other things. And Cal Poly, you know, this, in the same way that you talked about Montana State not being afraid of anybody at Washington State, I think you're seeing kind of a similar regional thing probably in terms of Cal Poly going to San Jose State. There are a couple local kids actually from Paso Robles High School who play for San Jose State too. I don't know how deep Cal Poly was in recruiting either of them, but Josh Oliver and Bailey Gaither are some names on San Jose State's team that are local from the San Luis Obispo area. And we're pretty small here, so we don't have a ton of, you know, D1 football talent that comes out of the area every year. So that's kind of a big deal, and people around here do know who those guys are too. So it should be a fun day. I'm going to wear my sunscreen. I'm going to wear a big fishing hat, I think. I usually wear a you know, just like a baseball hat, but I think with a 100-plus degrees and some field turf, I think I'm going to be, you know, dressed for the weather. I don't think anybody's going to mind if I have shorts going up and down from the press box, and it's going to be a hot one up in San Jose State. It used to be called Spartan Stadium, and I'm blanking on the name of the stadium now. Sorry, San Jose State. I'll figure it out and I'll write it the right way. Coulter, if people want to get information about you, from you, follow you, I know Skyline Sports, is it SkylineSportsMT.com or is it
SkylineSportsMT.com? That's the best way to follow us. We're also on Twitter at SkylineSportsMT. We'll have all sorts of coverage coming out of Saturday. We're going to be at both the Grizz and the Bobcats openers, and then we're also going to have full recaps of Cal Poly action as well as all the other games around the Big Sky Conference too. So, yep, SkylineSportsMT.com. That's the best way to get a hold of us.
And if we want to listen to your radio show, do you guys stream online?
We do, yeah. 1029fm.com. That's the website for the radio station. And then you just click on the TNT link, and we have a live stream every single day. And we also archive the show into a podcast as well.
There you go. So if you want to listen to what people from Montana think about the Big Sky and expectations and other things. Like you said, a lot of the times the Big Sky Conference goes through Montana. We'll see about this year. But Coulter, I really appreciate you coming on, and definitely maybe as the season goes on, catch up again sometime.
Yeah, absolutely. We should definitely do it again. Appreciate you having me, Ellie.
Thanks, Coulter.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. Oh, can't find my way around Trouble Town. From there.